And welcome into the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Got a loaded show for you today. We'll react to a big Predators win last night, 3-1 to begin the season against the Columbus Blue Jackets. We'll also visit with our man Ryan McGee from ESPN at 7 o'clock. Teron Davenport at 8 o'clock to talk some Titans. And then Crispy at 8:30. Terry Crisp joins us at that time to talk about the Nashville Predators. So a loaded show today. Gentlemen, what's going on? Joe Rexroad, how are we doing?
Great. Good win for the Preds last night.
It absolutely was. Ryan Porth, how are we doing?
Doing great.
Very good. So I was there last night, and I've got to tell you both. You know, I kind of expected it going into the game, how weird it was going to be. But once you get in the building for warm-ups, you get through the pregame festivities that we're used to every time the Predators open up their season, and then the puck drops, I got to tell you, it was so eerie in Bridgestone Arena last night. Now, the Predators did a great job, and they had, you know, some piped-in noise, and, you know, Paul McCann was there announcing as if, you know, there were 17,000 people in the stands. But just to watch a hockey game with, you know, scoring chances happening and big plays in front of the net, and to not hear like the natural crowd noise of just the oohs and the ahs and everything that goes into a hockey crowd, or to hear a Predators, you know, player score a goal and the crowd just not chanting back at the other team. It was very strange, Joe Rexroad, I must admit.
Did you hear at any point, like, because obviously there's family members and, you know, of course, some of those first responders were there and some other people with them.
Yeah.
Like, did you hear them at any point?
Oh, yeah. There were a few woos, people getting up and dancing and yelling and screaming at the top of their lungs. So, yes, you could hear at times the players on the ice. It came through loud and clear in terms of what they were saying and what was going on out there. So that part was kind of interesting. But just and Joe, you had some experience with this too, like just watching a game. You know, when you were in Baltimore with the Ravens and the Titans, or last night,
right.
You know, to just be inside Bridgestone Arena that was largely empty to watch a hockey game, it was really strange.
Yeah, I enjoyed. I mean, I saw. I think it was Gentry Estes took a picture of the exit by the row by Rose at the end.
Yeah.
You know, on the scoreboard. So having a little fun with it, but. Yeah, I mean, it's still, like, watching it on TV, you know, it still seemed, I guess, more normal than the bubble just because it was still, you know, it looks like the arena they play in. It doesn't look all that different on TV, right?
Right.
And, of course, they've got piped-in noise. But, like you said, then you have certain camera angles and you're reminded quickly, like, oh, wow, yeah, that's what it's going to be like. So, it didn't seem that it seems like these guys are used to, I guess, sort of manufacturing their own energy now, which was a big question going into the bubbles. But, you know, it seemed like the energy was great for both teams last night.
Yeah, I thought so, too, on the ice. Like, once the game got going and everything was flying around out there, both teams looked fine. I thought, you know, the pace for being the first game and, you know, everything that you've been kind of training for in a week and a half, two-week training camp, thought the pace was pretty good in that game. I will say, like, in the pregame festivities where, you know how it works on opening night. I mean, you're introducing every player individually, and they're skating through the Pred head out there. And they did a great job last night of kind of honoring first responders and businesses in Nashville, and a really cool thing done by the Predators. But you could tell, like, you know, that normal buzz that you got coming through where, you know, people are revved up for opening night. And the players are coming out there just jetting to the blue line to line up, and there's a bunch of emotion. That was not there. I mean, they were just kind of looking around, waving their sticks in the air to pretty much nobody in the crowd.
Yeah, well, that's funny you say that. Well, for one thing, I always like that because you get a gauge for, you know, who gets the biggest cheers, you know.
Right.
Every year, it's you know, it's usually there's five or six people that are really close to the top, and then you know, Forsberg wins first star, which, by the way, I thought should have been Saros.
Yeah.
Even though that was an incredible goal by Forsberg, but he sort of had a smirk on his face, you know, as he went up there and skated and raised a stick because he was raising it to basically no one.
Yeah. I appreciated his salute that he gave us in the press box. It was nice. as you watched the game last night, given the fact that it is the first game, I thought at times, Joe, both teams looked pretty sloppy and looked pretty rusty out there, which you expect in the first game. Overall, what did you think of the game, the quality of play, and ultimately the performance we saw out of the Predators in a 3-1 win?
Yeah, some mistakes, but you know, I thought that the big thing for me, two things that we've talked about and last year talked about, but even this week going into the game, one, you know, the fight back when you get behind, you know, Dante Fabro kind of makes a mistake in the neutral zone and kind of a weird play. All of a sudden, you know, you got one in the back of the net, you got a breakaway. You know, I thought the Preds fought back, and I thought that they were the better team in the second and third. And again, I really liked how they played with the lead in the third. I mean, Columbus was sitting on one shot there until the very, you know, that last push, you know, with an empty net. So I thought that they got better as the game went on. And yeah, some sloppiness, but good, solid performance, you know, and a nice, I thought, mentally strong performance.
And how about we did, you know, the Predators pick to click yesterday, sponsored by New Amsterdam Vodka. And Joe Rexrode, you nailed it immediately. Luke Cunning, the first goal of the season for the Nashville Predators. Congratulations.
I mean, it's weird, but it works, right? Whoever's making it, you know, someone making a debut is going to score. So, and that was a real nice, play by,
yeah, Eric Halla pushed the puck up.
Yeah, Halla, really, really nice job. And then Cunning kind of looked like Arvidsson, you know, that right circle kind of blast that he loves to do on the rush. So nice goal for him, and there you go. So what does that – mean I'm 1-0 now?
Yeah. I mean, your percentage is 1,000. It's pretty good. If you can keep that up all year, you're going to win this competition.
Got to win something.
And how about our contestant yesterday, Julie? Gets Forsberg right out of the gate.
Okay, so does so Julie gets the prize pack?
Yes.
Yeah.
You don't get a prize pack, Joe.
Yeah. You're not eligible. Sorry,
that's,
Joe.
That's fine. I'll take the pride. I'll take the pride over the prize
there
pack.
You go. But yeah, Julie, how about the first edition of Pick to Click? She gets it right, so she gets the prize. Absolutely. Congratulations, Julie.
Ryan Porth, as you watched the Nashville Predators last night, what were your impressions of their first game?
I thought they got better as the game went along. I thought the first period was very sloppy all the way around. Dante Fabro was kind of in no man's land. I felt like on that first goal by Columbus where the puck was cruising into, you know, through the neutral zone and he couldn't really decide what to do, steps up, tries to make a play. And he fires the puck right into Boone Jenner, and there goes Jenner on a breakaway, and he scores. But after that, I thought the Preds played really well and showed examples of what the coaching staff and the players have been talking about in these last couple weeks and all offseason long of wanting to be harder to play against. I didn't feel like Columbus got a lot of great chances, especially in the third period.
Yeah, I thought in the third period they pretty much locked them down and spent most of that period in the offensive zone, which is obviously really good to see. And, Joe, to that point, I mean, you have something bad happen in the first period. Fabro misplays the puck. He turns it over, and Boone Jenner goes down and scores. And I know a lot of the chatter in the press box was, all right, let's see how they respond to this, because last year didn't respond overly well to situations like this. And it's one game. I'm not going to sit here and overreact to it. But I did thought that they responded pretty well to an adverse start to the game, and you just got to keep playing. I thought that's what the Predators did.
Yeah, they did, and I mean, really, they were really cycling in that offensive zone with the lead in the third period, drawing penalties, you know, killing time up. I thought the power play, the first one, was really good.
Yeah,
Duchesne had some really nice plays, and they should have scored a couple times. It wasn't great after that, but I know that's, you know, sometimes you're holding on to a lead late in a game too, and those don't always work out the same way. But I also thought, you know, with Saros, especially you think about in the second period, that puck kind of plops, you know, right in the slot, and he just robs Grigorenko. or else that's 2-0. And then who knows, you know, from there. But I thought he was big. He was really good, I thought.
He was. I thought Saros played really well. I thought early in the game he was scrambling a little bit in the net and kind of over-pursuing at times. And then I thought after that, I mean, after about a five-minute period, he really settled down and looked very, very good. I mean, even in the second period, late in the second period, Predators had about a three-minute stretch where they couldn't hold on to the puck in the defensive zone, and they kept turning it over, and there were some miscues, and Saros made big save after big save. So I thought a really impressive performance from UC Saros in Game 1, and we'll see what the Predators do at goalie in Game 2 against Columbus. And by the way, be listening all morning long here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We will have your cue to call beginning this hour for your chance to qualify for some tickets to be in attendance tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena as the Predators take on the Columbus Blue Jackets once again. So make sure you're listening in for that. I do want to pass along a tweet from Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network. This coming right before we got on the air, Joe Rex Show. It says, quote, Titans offensive coordinator Arthur Smith has been the focus for the Falcons, and the two sides have been talking, sources say. His Lions trip is now off, and the Eagles have been monitoring, but all eyes on Atlanta for Arthur Smith. So, Joe, looking like Arthur Smith in Atlanta becoming closer and closer to a reality, and maybe the best news for Arthur Smith is apparently not going back to the Lions. Not going to go see them.
Good move, Arthur. Good move. Yeah, the Lions move out on Robert Saleh, which, guy from Detroit, he goes to the Jets. Now, Arthur Smith had gone – I mean, he had multiple interviews with the Jets, yep. But to me, that's a win also to avoid that. I think it's a good deal. You still have a good quarterback there. Again, ownership. Arthur Blank is a very respected owner, been a guy who people like working for, and I think that's a great deal for him to get. I mean, any head coaching job, but I think that's one he can work with. And who knows, he might have Justin Fields next year.
He might. And who knows how quickly this is going to move with Arthur Smith and the Falcons. We'll see whether or not they can get a deal done and whether or not maybe that happens on our show today. We will continue to monitor that as we go throughout the show here on this Friday morning. And when we come back, we'll dive back into the Predators. I had two major takeaways from the game last night. I know it's one game, but there was a couple of things that stuck out to me very quickly in that game last night for the Nashville Predators that I think could be a big factor for them this season. We'll discuss that when we come back. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Here's Philip Forsberg breaking in 2-on-1. He scores! Philip Forsberg from the left circle! And folks, sorry, no dessert tonight, but the Predators wrap up the season opening 3-1 victory.
I thought as the game went along, we played better. I thought our best period was the third period. But I think just the way that the game went, you know, the way we got down, we hit the post, and then they come down and score. And, you know, they're a good team. They're tight checking. There's not a lot of room. You have to fight for your ice offensively. And you know, I really just liked our mindset through the game, whether it was on the bench or in between periods. We just kept playing and figuring out what we needed to do a little bit better. And so we stayed with it and, you know, wound up tying the game and then finding a way to win it. So good first night. We'll take the positives out of it. And then I think there's lots of lessons and things we can do a little bit better also.
That was Predators head coach John Hines after the game last night. A 3-1 win for the Nashville Predators against the Columbus Blue Jackets to take the first game of the season. One down, 55 to go for Nashville in what has been described to me many times as a sprint this season rather than a marathon with a normal 82-game season. So a good start for the Predators.
You know, as they say, you can't go 56-0 without going 1-0.
That is true. You're very correct in that assessment. Thank you, Ryan Porth. Look, I'm not going to sit here and overreact to one game. It's a 3-1 win. It's a hockey season. Lots of things can happen in a normal season, much less a season like this where COVID is a factor. And, you know, with this condensed schedule, you know, you worry about injuries at some point too, I think, league-wide. But I will say this, that there were two things that stood out to me very quickly last night about this group and this Nashville Predators team. And we've talked a lot about style of play. I mean, I think that's part of it. But one thing that stood out very quickly to me last night is I was looking around, and I've said many times, I feel probably as good about this six on defense as I felt in a long time about the Predators. And I know Dante Fabro had a big mistake, but I was looking around when the third pairing came out, and it's Mark Borowiecki and Matt Benning. And I'm just kind of naturally trained, to be honest with you, watching the Predators play. And when their third pairing's out, I'm just like, oh, boy. All righty. Let me look up here and see what's going to happen, because generally speaking, it hasn't been good the last 3 or 4 years. I was almost blown away by how well those two played last night. I thought Borowiecki and Benning were incredibly solid. I thought there were maybe one or two mistakes that I could count from those two guys as a pairing. And, you know, when you factor in, number one, they're a brand-new pairing. That's their first game together. But number two, you know, you're talking about a defense pairing that, you know, you've got your third pair behind Josi and Ellis and then Ekholm and Fabbro, four guys who obviously eat up a lot of minutes and eat up a lot of time. Both of those guys, and Borowiecki and Benning last night, end up with more than 15 minutes. They had some time on the penalty kill. Those two are a major upgrade from what they've had on that third pair. And we talked to Hal Gill about it. There is a drop-off, obviously, between the top four and that third pair still with Borowiecki and Benning. But those two, compared to what's been out there and trotted out there on that third pair the last 3 or 4 years, they're significantly better. And that was evident to me from the start.
Yeah, Benning at one point blocked a shot that I was like, uh-oh, that one might linger. I mean, he was holding onto that like hand or wrist for a while, you know, in pain. But heck of a block shot. There was a lot of block shots too, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, that was a good. But I agree. I mean, I think those guys were very good, and that should be. I mean, I'm trying to think back to, because I mean, those guys were so all over the penalty kill. And I'm trying to think back. Certainly, you got some PK minutes out of your third pairing in the past, but not a ton.
Not a lot, yeah.
And you know, so you think about the load you can take off, you know, your especially, you know, Josi and Ellis, I think, over a period of time. I mean, I think there's a nice cumulative effect there that you should be able to get. So I agree. One takeaway I had is that Nick Cousins is, I mean, he is absolutely living up to the hype of agitator.
Yeah.
Just a trash talking dude, man. The guy talks some serious trash to the refs, to the opponent. sometimes maybe to just whoever is in front of him. So he's got a punchable face for opponents. and I think that, you know, I think fans are going to like him here, and I think opponents are going to not like him.
Yeah, and look, they've needed some of that. We've talked about that. I mean, there's been nowhere near enough of that, I think, for the Predators the last couple of years, and I agree. I thought Nick Cousins stood out in that way, got some power play time as well last night. So I thought a really good debut for Nick Cousins and what they're asking him to do. Joe, the other thing I took away, and this kind of pairs with what I was talking about with Borowiecki and Benning, the identity that I think this group is going to have to play, you know, we know about the toughness and being mentally tough and all that we've talked about so much. But in terms of just the tactics on the ice and the strategy on the ice, I think this team has a real opportunity to be one of the best defensive teams in the NHL. I thought not only the six that I talked about on defense, but I thought the Predators forwards defended really well last night. I thought there was a buy-in there. You know, Forsberg talked about it a little bit after the game, how, you know, the Jofa line wasn't going very well offensively to begin the game. I thought defensively, Johansson in particular, was outstanding last night. Some back checks that he made, a couple of block shots in the slot. I mean, I just thought there was a buy-in, a noticeable buy-in. And as the game went on, I mean, Columbus, you know, other than a few chances in the second period, they got nothing in the third period. I thought there was a buy-in all over the map last night defensively. And look, we've talked about this team and their offense and maybe some struggles that you have and some concerns that you have. And those, to me, are not alleviated at this point. I think you're going to see the Jofa line play well. I still have my questions about Duchesne's line and the wingers that he has with him right now. And even when Granlund comes back, how consistently productive they're going to be able to be. But I do think this team has a chance to be in the top five defensively. And to me, that's the way this team is going to have to play, and that's the way this team's going to have to win.
Yeah, well, if that's the case, then I think they're going, you know, I think they're going to win more than their share. You know, but yeah, the offensive questions are still there. But that would be big. I will say that I thought Deshane in particular looked fast to me.
Yeah.
And again, I thought he made a lot of plays that could have led to things. I mean, I know, you know, could have, would have, should have. But if he plays like that, you know, I just thought he was – I thought he was creative, and I thought he looked like he had a burst, and I thought that was good to see. I thought that line a few times, you know, it had some nice chances. And of course, you know, we talked earlier already about him on the power play, and that first power play, which I thought was a, was easily the best of the three they had. So, but you, to your point, I mean, they've got to prove, they got to put it in the back of the net. And maybe, you know, that will happen with Granlund coming in, but obviously Cunnan, very nice, you know, debut for him. Good to see him score one.
And we talked about, you know, the mindset of the say and do gap. That's been kind of a go-to phrase that John Hines has had, and he talked about it on our show yesterday when he joined us, of not having a gap between what you say and the game that they've been talking in terms of being harder to play against and then going out on the ice and not being able to follow that up. I thought the Predators did that last night. I thought they played really well. They overcame some adversity and just had that buy-in as a team, as I was talking about. And John Hines talked about that in his post-game press conference. Here's what Predators head coach John Hines had to say.
I think the biggest thing, you know, I mean, you can go dissect the game and things like that, but it's more the mentality of, you know, not unraveling when something bad happened. You know, they scored a goal. We were playing some good hockey. They came in, but we just kept playing and playing and playing and playing. And, you know, when you find ways to win and you don't go rogue off of what you want to do, you know, that's a hard team to play against. And I think, you know, I don't think you could look through the lineup tonight and say that, you know, maybe you didn't like everyone's performance 100%, but I don't think you're coming out of this game and saying, one, you got outworked, and two, there wasn't an effort level and a strong commitment level throughout the lineup, and that's hard to play against.
So that was John Hines after the game last night, and I think that's a great point, Joe, when he talks about not going rogue when things go mad and not, you know, just totally abandoning what's your identity and what makes you successful as a team. I do think last year they were guilty of that way too often. They got into panic mode when bad things happened and thought that they had to, you know, stick handle and dangle their way out of trouble and try to get everything back at once. And I thought the Predators did a nice job last night, even when things went wrong, of sticking to the way they know they're going to have to play. And that, to me, is a pretty big sign of improvement. Now, it's one thing to do that in one game. You got to do that throughout the course of the season, but it's a good start.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's again, I don't think anyone signs up and says, hey, let's see what happens falling behind right away, make a mistake early, fall behind, see how you respond. You don't want that. You want to play from ahead and you want to play well the whole game, but I thought it ended up being a pretty nice test, and I thought they passed the first test. You know, it's a lot of that is trust. I mean, this is still a new team in a lot of places, guys who haven't played with each other. They had a condensed training camp. I mean, you got Cole Smith out there,
yeah.
You know, making his NHL debut, and I'm like, Cole Smith, really? You know, you got some new faces and some new combinations, and given all that, they look pretty especially again, second and third periods, they looked like a team that really knows how to play together. You know, a lot of guys, it looked like they knew exactly what they were supposed to do within the system. So I think that's encouraging. Now, you fall behind 2-0, maybe that throws everything into chaos, you know?
Yeah.
But I thought they handled that situation well, and it did. It looked like a veteran team that had been together. In a lot of cases, they are, but in some, you know, they haven't been, and so I thought that was pretty impressive.
And then even still, I mean, you're playing well. I think you're feeling good about the way the game is trending, but you need one of your playmakers to make a play, and that's when Philip Forsberg came into the picture last night. He makes the play to give them a 2-1 lead. I thought it was really the embodiment of what they want him to be, and that is a combination of power to retrieve a puck, and then the skill takes over on the odd man rush, and Forsberg gets his first of the season. And John Hines talked about that on our show yesterday and after the game last night about what he's looking for from Philip Forsberg. Here's what John Hines had to say.
I think if you look at the way he scored it, I think it was off of a D-zone faceoff loss. You know, he fights through a pick. He gets out to his point, you know, they winds up being he winds up getting the puck, and then he's able to kind of powers past the defenseman. And then now he's in the situation where his, you know, his skill can come out. Now he's on an odd man rush, and you know, you give him time and space. It's a good thing for him. So yes, I think that's a good example of Phil.
So I thought that play last night by Forsberg, Joe, was pretty impressive. I mean, the ability to fight for the faceoff, take it basically coast to coast at that point. And, you know, once he got around, I think it was Savard and Domi on that play. I mean, they had no chance. When it's a 2-on-1 and he's skating into the slot like that, good luck if you're a goaltender.
Yeah, and before that, you know, it's like guys kind of – it's like bowling pins, yeah, you know, falling down behind him. It's almost like an action movie. The bad guys like all bump, fumble around on each other and, you know. But, I mean, that was it. That was the power forward, and now you're in trouble. And when he has speed and he picks a spot like that, yeah, it's usually going to work out pretty well for him.
Go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texts in and says, how about Ekholm's save last night? Clutch. And Joe, yeah, you brought that up of, you know, it's 1-0 at that point. Saros is kind of scrambling, and I think he makes the original save, and Ekholm comes in and saves the day as well. That's a big play in that game. You get behind 2-0, and who knows what the game looks like after that.
No, that's a great point. And that was in the first period. So that was, yeah, Ekholm big time there. And now the Grigorenko one was in the second period with one of those kind of fluky little plays. The puck ends up right in front of Saros, and he robs him point blank. But yeah, both of those plays are big, and those are, you know, things that you want to try to clean up, because who knows what happens if the game gets to, you know, 2-0. But yeah, I mean, again, Saros. But Ekholm there, for sure, that was Ekholm. But in a lot of other spots, too, I thought Saros really stepped up. He was impressive.
He really was. I thought he played well. 29 saves for UC Saros last night. And a good start in the campaign for the Predators. 1-down, 55 to go. They play Columbus again on Saturday night. And we'll continue to look ahead to that and react to what we've seen out of the Predators all show long here today on Robbie and Retro. But when we come back, we've got some breaking news on the Titans front, and maybe some news with their offensive coordinator as well. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Some breaking news on the front with Arthur Smith. We talked about it earlier in the show, Joe, about how it looked like, you know, the conversations between Arthur Smith and the Atlanta Falcons were trending towards maybe Arthur Smith getting a job offer. And according to Diana Russini of ESPN, that has happened. Quote, the Atlanta Falcons have made an offer to Arthur Smith to become their next head coach, per sources. Smith has been the offensive coordinator for the Titans for the last two seasons. So according to Diana Russini, the offer is on the table for Arthur Smith to become the next head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. Joe Rexroad, what's your reaction to that? And do you think that's the right job for Arthur Smith when you look at the situation with Matt Ryan, an aging Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, a great player offensively? What do you think of that job, and should that be something that Arthur Smith decides to take?
Well, it wouldn't be my first choice for him. You know, I predicted the Chargers, and I mean, I agree, and we've had guests on, and we've said it too. I mean, I think that's the ideal spot. The L.A. Chargers with Justin Herbert, after all the promise he showed as a rookie and some of the really good pieces they have, you know, really banged-up team this year. They've had a lot of bad luck, but I just think that's a terrific situation overall. And I don't know. I mean, I think I ranked the Falcons job like fourth or fifth of these jobs. So it's
me
not,
too. Yeah,
it's not the greatest, but again, I think that if you look at the positive, I think the Arthur Blank, ownership is one. Also, I mean, look, a lot of times when you get a head coaching job in the NFL, you're inheriting a bad QB situation, and maybe you're inheriting a high pick. In this case, you're inheriting a okay QB situation plus a high pick. You know, the Falcons are fourth in the draft, and certainly this could be the landing spot for Justin Fields, in which case I'd feel pretty good about things if I were Arthur Smith. doesn't mean for sure it's going to happen, but if the Jets are going to take Zach Wilson, as is the speculation right now, Fields will be there for the Falcons. So, I mean, I'd be excited about – I mean, look, we're going to talk about Urban Meyer and the Jags. I think that you have to be really excited about Trevor Lawrence and feel no, there's no sure thing, but Trevor Lawrence to me looks like a guy who's going to be a very good quarterback in this league. Justin Fields could be special too. He really could be. So from that perspective, if that's how it's going to go, I mean, you like it. I mean, they've got a lot of, you know, they've got some cap issues. They've got, some a long way to go on defense, you know, that they've kind of eroded on that side of the ball. But this is certainly better than the Lions. I can tell you that much. I mean, it's better. And I think it's better than the Jets job too. I just ownership, their situation. I would pick the Falcons over that job too.
Do you think the Falcons job is better than Philly?
Yeah, actually I do, because Philly is in as much cap hell as any team in this league right now. I mean, they are in absolute cap misery. And I just, you know, like Wentz, I don't really have a ton of – I like Hurts. Yeah, I think Hurts is fine, but I don't feel like he's destined to be a star in this league. And right. We know Wentz has issues. I do. I think I feel better about Ryan than Wentz, and I would feel better about Fields than Hurts.
I just wonder how – If you're Arthur Smith coming into that job, you view Matt Ryan. Because, I mean, you look at the numbers. He's thrown for more than 4,000 yards 10 seasons in a row, which is pretty impressive. But it's also, I mean, you look at his attempts this year. They threw the ball 626 times. By comparison, Ryan Tannehill threw the ball 481 times this year. So you're talking about, you know, a guy that's just been slinging it all over the yard. Their defense has been atrocious. And even though, you know, Ryan, his numbers are good, you look at that offense, and I think the one consistent theme ever since they made it to the Super Bowl and lost that game was, I've always felt like there's more there. Like, I've always felt like there's more production that should be there from an offense that has Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. At one time had Mohamed Sanu. Last year, Todd Gurley comes into the fold. I mean, offensively, there have been some good pieces there. And still, they've really struggled the last few years. I mean, 7-9, they're 7-8-1 one year, 4-12. I mean, they have been trending in the wrong direction. And I know a lot of that's defensively, but I just wonder how Arthur Smith views Matt Ryan. If he's going to take this job, what does his long-term future look like? What is his interest level in keeping Matt Ryan around for the next few years?
Well, yeah, and I mean, I wonder if this has been discussed in these multiple interviews. Yeah. You know, I mean, he may know right now what the plan is on that. Because you're right, Matt Ryan still puts up good numbers. You watch him play. I mean, he's a talented player. You know, it's not like you. I mean, you could do a lot worse than Matt Ryan. I do think their primary issues are just defensively. I mean, I think that number of attempts speaks to what they are defensively, largely. You know, that team also, I mean, man, did they blow some games this year. But, gosh, I guess I'd be surprised if the Falcons aren't thinking next QB. You know, when you look at their cap situation, I think it's the same thing with the Lions. I mean, you've got a really good quarterback, and both those guys, Stafford and Ryan, I think in the right place could take a team to the next level. Like, I look at both of them, and I look at the Colts, for example, and I say, you know what? Like, you could go real far with either of those guys on the Colts instead of Phillip Rivers, in my opinion. But if you're the Falcons, you know, to be able to start over with a rookie contract with a young, exciting quarterback, I would have to think that would be appealing. And maybe that's been part of the discussion for Arthur Smith.
And wouldn't that be even more appealing considering what's going on in that division? I mean, you've got two aging quarterbacks who are going to be playing on the History Channel, you know, Sunday afternoon. Who
Brady's going to play until he's 58 years
well,
old.
Well, maybe, but, you know, I don't think he's going to be able to throw it 5 yards down the field when he's 58 years old. But there's a window there that when Breeze is gone, the Saints are going to be in cap, you know what. When Brady's gone, who knows what the Bucs are like. And those two things could easily happen in the next 2 years.
Right. And in Carolina, you know, Bridgewater's good. I mean, they showed some good stuff this year. They didn't have McCaffrey, you know, he'll be back, but I wouldn't be like terrified of them either down the road. So you're right. I mean, if you make some good moves here and if you bring in that next guy and he's what you hope he is, all of a sudden you could be set up for success for many years. You know, interestingly, guys, the Titans, Josina Anderson reported to say that Vrabel reached out, at least kind of pre-reached out to Tony Elliott, OC from Clemson, which I think is very interesting, you know, to sort of gauge his interest. Another team did as well, and apparently he said, you know, that he wants to stay at Clemson, but that just shows you a little bit that maybe the Titans aren't just completely resolved to go internal here.
Yeah, and that's, you know, we talked about it yesterday. If Arthur Smith goes, and at this point, I mean, I'd just be totally floored if he's not back or if he's not a head coach somewhere else next year and looking like Atlanta at this point. Do they go internal? Or are they willing to look outside of the club right now and try to bring in somebody else? And like you said, Josina Anderson reporting yesterday that the Titans did have interest or were gauging Tony Elliott's interest, the offensive coordinator at Clemson. The Dolphins also were the other team doing that, according to Josina Anderson. So if it doesn't work out with Tony Elliott, as it appears it won't, at least that tells you to me that the Titans are willing to think outside the box and not just promote from within, which I think honestly is a good thing. I think Vrabel needs to do a little bit more of that, of at least considering going outside of the organization and bringing other people in.
And to that point, Jerry Dulac, who covers the Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette yesterday, reported that the Titans interviewed or are interviewing Terrell Austin, Steelers defensive assistant / secondary coach. Terrell Austin has been an accomplished DC in this league. He actually did a really good job at the Lions a few years ago. I thought he's going to get a head coaching job. So there's another outside of the immediate, you know, circle potential hire, at least interview. And I think that's a good sign too.
So we'll continue to keep you updated on Arthur Smith and whether or not news breaks that maybe he's accepted this job offer from the Atlanta Falcons. While we're on the show today, lots to get to still coming up today on the show. When we come back, we'll introduce our poll question of the day surrounding Urban Meyer and the Jacksonville Jaguars, a new coach in the AFC South. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I think you've got the Jacksonville Jaguars with, as you mentioned, the number one overall pick and a chance to draft the player that some believe is a generational quarterback in Trevor Lawrence. You've got a team with 11 picks scheduled for the April draft. You've got a team with close to $100 million in salary cap space, depending on how you're analyzing the roster, at a time where the salary cap is going to be down and there's going to be more buying opportunities for teams than ever before in free agency. So if he was ever going to take a job at the NFL level, there couldn't be this many factors coming together all at once in front of him.
That was Adam Schefter from ESPN discussing the hire of Urban Meyer to the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's official. It is done. Urban Meyer, now a head coach in the AFC South. He will be in Jacksonville. And, Joe, we talked about it a little bit yesterday. I just still think it's pretty amazing that we've gotten to this point. I never really believed Urban Meyer would end up being the coach, but here we are. He's the coach. He's decided to take the job. And when you hear some of the things that Schefter lays out there of, obviously, Trevor Lawrence and the cap space that Jacksonville has and the opportunity maybe in a year like this with the draft picks they have available to them to really change the makeup of this roster, I guess it's not all that surprising. But Urban Meyer, certainly going to be interesting now in the AFC South with some of the coaches floating around here and just that guy in general and the buzz and noise he brings.
I mean, the focus on Jacksonville, when's the last time, if ever, that the rest of the league cared this much about Jacksonville? Because it's going to be good or bad, wherever this ends up, there's going to be a ton of focus on Jacksonville, because this is, I mean, look, very few of these elite college coaches have succeeded in the NFL. I mean, that's, you know, over years and years, and you can obviously include Nick Saban, who quickly kind of found out that picking your own players is better. But it's a pretty strong situation for Urban. I do think my biggest concern about this is everything you hear about Urban Meyer, and even think, I mean, he's acknowledged this. I mean, he hates losing, and he's going to lose a lot, at least early in Jacksonville.
Yeah, and how do you respond to that? Obviously, not something that Urban Meyer is used to, and you know, it is interesting going from college to the NFL. Like you said, Joe, not very many people have made this transition successfully and have been a really successful college head coach and then also a really successful NFL head coach. I do think times are different. I do think that, you know, the style of play is probably more similar now than it's been in years past, but still I think a huge challenge for Urban Meyer taking that step through the NFL. And he came out with a statement yesterday after it was announced that he had signed to be the coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, says, quote, "I'm ready to coach the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jacksonville has an enthusiastic fan base, and the fans deserve a winning team. With upcoming opportunities in the NFL draft and strong support from ownership, the Jaguars are well-positioned to become competitive. I've analyzed this decision from every angle. The time is right in Jacksonville, and the time is right for me to return to coaching. I'm excited about the future of this organization and our long-term prospect for success." And the timing being right for him to return to coaching to me is still where this is just hilarious about how it's always about stepping down and health and spending more time with family. And then, oh, this better job comes open. Let me go see if I can take that.
Yeah. Now look, yeah. And there'll be a ton of that. And it's totally warranted. I will say that like people that I totally trust, will swear up and down like the health stuff is not like made up. I mean, the guy has had some serious health stuff. There's other things too. You know, obviously the Ohio State tenure was, I mean, that totally changed on the Zach Smith stuff and right. The domestic abuse. I mean, that was a big part of that. I absolutely believe that leaving Florida, part of it was what was happening with Nick Saban in Alabama and what was coming there. But at the same time, I mean, this is not just made up either. Like he's had the health stuff, and I think it's tied obviously to stress, you know, and that's what you wonder about. Like, so you're cool, you know, 6-10. I mean, you have a good year and you lose 5-6 games,
right?
You know, that's just not what he's used to. So that's my big question with him, because I think that there's a chance that that becomes a factor again. There are fewer hours. You know, there was more life balance. There's not the 24/7, 365 focus on recruiting. So that should be, I mean, that's why a lot of guys find it attractive, you know, to go from college to the NFL. But the way he is, I mean, you know, he's going to be obsessive about this, and it's going to be fascinating to see if he can make it work. I know some people are talking about the offense, and that's a valid question too. His OC hire is going to be really interesting to me. And I think this is where he should look for fresh ideas too, and sort of get, even though that's his baby, I think he's got to be open to, you know, different ideas and an OC who has some different thoughts.
So let's introduce our poll question of the day at 1025 The Game on Twitter. And this is for Titans fans. What is your concern level about Jacksonville after the hiring of Urban Meyer and the likely selection of Trevor Lawrence? And the options are: you're very nervous, you'll wait and see mode, or not nervous at all. 177 votes so far. 46% say they're in wait and see mode. 43% say not nervous at all about Jacksonville. And only 11%, Joe, say they're very nervous about the Jags and Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence coming into the fold in the AFC South. So a lot of people still in wait and see mode. Not very many people at this point terrified of Jacksonville and what they could look like in the next 3 years.
Well, hey, they could screw it up.
Oh,
I mean, they could certainly screw it up. And look, I mean, Trevor Lawrence, I watched the guy, and I just have a hard time thinking he won't at least be a good NFL quarterback. I mean, it's hard. You can't. I don't think you can look at anybody in college and say for sure that person is going to be, especially at that position, that's going to be a great quarterback. Boy. If he's not a good NFL quarterback, I'll be very surprised. But you know what? Over many, many years, I've been wrong on so many of those guys, and most of them don't work out. So that's one thing to keep in mind. And certainly the Jags could screw up all these draft picks too. But it's got to be, I mean, if you're Urban Meyer, it's got to be awfully attractive to look at sort of being able to be in on the ground floor with what could be a generational quarterback.
Yeah, and the question I have for Jacksonville and for Urban Meyer is how long is his patience level? Like, look, I think Urban Meyer's a good coach, and I do think he's got a chance to come in and be successful in this job. I don't know if I'd, you know, bet my house on it or anything like that, but I just wonder, you know, this team is 1-15, and I get they have, you know, a quarterback coming in that's going to be maybe a generational quarterback, and you've got a lot of room from a salary cap perspective to change things around. So things can change pretty quickly. And I do like some of the pieces that Jacksonville has in place already. I mean, DJ Chark, I'm interested to see what he can do when he's got an actual quarterback throwing in the ball. And James Robinson, I thought, had a really good year for Jacksonville. But this is a 1-15 team. It's not like they're going to come in next year and be 14-2. So I just wonder what the patience level looks like for Urban Meyer and how long he's willing to be in for the build of this, for the rebuild. Because if you get 2 years deep and you're still not in the playoffs, like, is Urban Meyer looking around saying, you know what, I'm done coaching, or I want to go back to college? Like, I just wonder where the commitment level is from Urban Meyer.
Yeah, that's a good question. Another question to me is approach, because Urban Meyer is a, you know, he's a big time dictator, challenger of people. Puts people on the spot. You know, he's tough on his coaches, tough on his players, but this is in college. You know, and in a way, I think he's like Nick Saban. I think they're similar coaches in some ways, at least, in terms of it's just, you know, my way or the highway, but also high pressure every day, trying to sort of manufacture what you want on game days. And, you know, sort of the idea of just as much stress as you can create and as much conflict as you can create, that's going to end up paying off. Does that work in the NFL? I don't know. I mean, like Mike Vrabel coached under Urban Meyer, Ohio State, and talked to him about that whole thing, that approach, that daily, the challenging of people. And Mike Vrabel is a demanding coach, but it's not that same thing. You know, these are still professionals, and you can't have the same approach with 30-year-old professionals as you do with 18-year-old freshmen. Now, of course, Urban Meyer is smart enough to understand this, so I don't expect him to go in there with the exact same approach, but it's still a transition, and he's never done it before, and that's worth watching too.
Seth on Twitter says, I'm not worried at all. For every single Pete Carroll and Jim Harbaugh, we have an equal Bobby Petrino, Steve Spurrier, or even Baby Shula or Nick Saban. A different level. Hopefully they let him draft his own guys in Jacksonville. So Seth, not very worried about Urban Meyer going to the Jags.
And Carroll is, of course, he's probably the shining example, right, of success. Now, he failed at the NFL level before, you know, in part because he had bad teams, bad players, or not good enough players relative to the rest of the league. But he's a great example of college and then going to the pro. Now, for Pete Carroll, I mean, his approach is, I wouldn't say country club, but, you know, I mean, he's got a much more kind of laid back, you know, approach to how he deals with people, and that's worked out well for him. Again, there's different ways to do this. But, yeah, the evidence suggests it's very hard for college guys to do it. But to your point, Robbie, we've talked about it this week, the games are a lot more similar than they used to be. So I do think we'll probably see more college to pro success moving forward. That's just a guess, and maybe Urban Meyer is going to be one of those guys who brings that in.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, all the more reason to hate Jacksonville even more. I will say, the unlikable meter on the Jags just went up a notch. I mean, Urban Meyer, to me, not very nice. Now, I will say this, Trevor Lawrence, I think, is very likable. So maybe they counterbalance each other and balance each other out. But Urban Meyer, certainly I can understand why. Not very popular with Titans fans. And if you're a Tennessee Vol Titan fan combo, you hate this hire.
I mean, when are we going to get Urban, you know, saying Duval? I mean, Man, that's just, you know.
Yeah, like, can he come in and change that? Like, if he comes in and gives them a better, you know, chant, maybe I will. Maybe I'll like him a little bit more.
I am
that's
all
awful.
For Urban Meyer in Jacksonville if he gets rid of that chant or whatever you call it.
Sign him to a lifetime contract. It's the dumbest thing
maybe
in the NFL.
Can, like, take the Ohio State song and just change the words or something, you know?
Maybe so.
Maybe you can text Urban and let him know those thoughts.
Yeah.
Maybe I will.
Just got to change.
I could tweet out his number if you want, and we could have everyone weigh
maybe
in.
Maybe so. Everybody can text him. Urban, I know you got a lot going on right now, but make sure you change that song once you get to Jacksonville. It is horrendous.
If you want to get rid of Duval, text Urban at this number.
Yes, maybe that's something we'll do here on the program. When we come back, our man Ryan McGee from ESPN and co-host of Marty and McGee, he'll join us. We'll get into Urban Meyer with him a little bit as well. What does he think about Urban Meyer and maybe the success or failure he could have in the NFL? All that's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.